be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. In the course of his preaching, John the Baptist said, "Someone is following me, someone who is more powerful than I am, and I am not fit to kneel down and undo the strap of his sandals. I have baptized with water, but he will baptize with the Holy Spirit." It was at this time that Jesus came from Nazareth in Galilee and was baptized in the Jordan by John. No sooner had he come up out of the water than he saw the heavens torn apart and the Spirit, like a dove, descending on him. And a voice came from heaven, "You are my Son, the Beloved. My favor rests on you." The Gospel of the Lord. I've already said before, St. Mark's introduction to Jesus is very abrupt and almost pared to the bone. If you compare it with the beginnings of the other Gospels, Jesus' arrival now as a 30-year-old, there's someone following me who's greater than I am, it's almost a bit like a disappointment because he just appears. No genealogy, no introduction, no miracles that accompany his birth, that we get, of course, from the other Gospels. But Mark knows what he's doing. He knows the story he's about to tell is dramatic enough, and he doesn't need to worry about the peripheral details. And Mark was the first of the Gospel writers to write the story of Jesus down. St. Paul wrote letters to the Christian churches, which were a bit older than Mark's Gospel. But Mark's was the first Gospel that sort of committed to memory Jesus, as it were, what they knew. Because, of course, in those days, they had the apostles still there, the disciples. So people thought that the Lord was due tomorrow or next week. So they didn't worry about writing it down. And then as time went on, and they all began to get a bit older, we all know about that, and, you know, you think, oh, we better write this down, because before they were thinking, no need to write it down, because there's nobody going to be here to read it, because it'll be the last days. Well, we're still living in the last days, and that's why Mark first wrote down that gospel. But he is direct. The story he's telling is so dramatic, and the way he tells it, and that's what we're going to follow this year, is like just one thing after another, which is what like history's like, isn't it? One just thing after another. So, emerging today, set on the scene, an unknown character from a hamlet of insignificant that it wasn't even mentioned in documents of the time. So to say he came from Nazareth was a bit like saying he came from nowhere. We've never heard of it. We don't know where it is. And adding that it was in Galilee only made things worse, because every non-Galilean Israelite despised Galilee. Why? Well, regionalism played its part. Galilee was way up in the north. Jerusalem, way down in the south. So the north-south divide is nothing new. It's at least 2,000, if not more years older than that. Galilee was also surrounded by pagan nations. So the people felt they were, or the people in Jerusalem felt they were corrupted by the surrounding nations, and also Hellenized, which was Greek culture, Greek influence, so that wasn't good. It was also in the Midlands, as it were, a few Midlanders, you're not left out, was Samaria. So to go from Galilee to Jerusalem, you had to go through Samaria. And you remember from the Gospels that when Jesus tries to do that, they tried to drive him from their towns. So it's quite interesting. All the things that, like, you know, Mousel and Newlyn, or Lelant and St. Ives, or even Newlyn and Penzance, It's ever the same. It was ever thus. And St. Ives and Hale, and to come round here, well. And it's always the same. And it's even brought out in the scriptures, because if you remember, Nathanael says, can anything good come from Nazareth? Because he's introduced and said, look, we found Jesus of Nazareth. Can any good thing come from Nazareth? And the next chapter of St. John's Gospel, chapter 3, says, the Pharisees say to Nicodemus, well, go into the matter. You know, prophets just don't come from Galilee. So I'd say all that because it's trying to get you to see that here's this obscure person, apparently insignificant, with no origins, who arrives at baptism. And Mark's saying the important thing is that what is dramatic is what happens there. It's above Jesus, this non-entity from nowhere in particular, that the heavens are torn open. And at that moment, it's quite clear, Mark's telling us, that something terrific here is happening. They're witnessing an apocalyptic moment because heaven and earth are engaged in some serious business. And in a way, it's an answer to Isaiah's Advent prayer, oh, that you would tear the heavens open and make known your name. All the people of the time would be expecting that to happen. They were expecting the Messiah to come. They were expecting many things to happen. Oh, that you would tear the heavens open and make known your name. Wallop. Heavens are torn open, and descending on Jesus, a dove, and the voice saying, you are my son, the beloved. My favor rests on you. All references, I mean, they're there in the Old Testament for the promised Messiah. So Mark said, this is this person. At his baptism, in a sense, Jesus is bringing all that the Old Testament is, all the old world, to an end and making it new in those waters of baptism. So that new world is born there in the River Jordan. And it's why this feast today marks the end of Christmastide. You see, everyone else that got their trees gone early, and then all the 12th night. No, we keep going because this child grew to be the one who is affirmed by the Father. You are my son, the beloved. My favor rests on you. And he's grasped by the Spirit of God, recognized for who he is, the servant and the son. He recognizes that. The people are not sure. That's what we discover as we go through the year with Mark. But that new beginning is there. And it's important we grasp that. I think particularly in the concentration of the last few days of what's been happening in France. And the clash, in a sense, of just religions and cultures that's all part of it, you see, is because the Christian believes what we actually believe. That's why the babe is there to remind us, the babe in the manger, that it is God who does act in history. It is God who did send his son. This is my son, the beloved. My favor rests on him. And immediately after his baptism, which is where we pick up after green time in the next few weeks in Lent, is immediately driven out into the wilderness to be tempted by Satan because he knows there's a conflict in Jesus coming. Because he comes from God and he teaches us how to be with God and how, in a sense, how to behave. And it's a struggle that we know goes on through to the death and resurrection of the Lord, which is why baptism is so important. And John, in that second reading, speaks of the Spirit and the water and the blood. Not just the Spirit and the water that we get today, but Jesus, my beloved Son, is the one that walks that way for us. As I said at the start, we've all been baptized. The space of time between now and Ash Wednesday, when we go with Jesus, as it were, into that wilderness, gives us time to reflect on and to build on the great mystery we've celebrated. Because, you see, if Christians aren't convinced of what we believe in, then evil takes over. And that's what the constant fight is all about. And Jesus came to show that fight. And so that we can reach out to people with the truth, his life, his way, his loving.